From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Kathleen Turner grew up the granddaughter of missionaries, the child of a diplomat, in Cuba when Fidel Castro took over, England when she came of age, an instant star and sex icon for Body Heat back in 1981, a big, deep voice, a big personality, a big, deep career. But no fairy tale. She's learned and lived a lot. Now she's on national tour with her show High as a tough, recovering, alcoholic nun wrestling with faith and addiction. This hour on Point, Kathleen Turner is with us. In her new production of Matthew Lombardo's play High, Kathleen Turner plays Sister Jameson, a one-time addict turned nun who brings an unusual approach to faith and to others in suffering addiction. Here Jameson tells her new patient, a 19-year-old homosexual meth and crack addict, that though she may not look and act like a nun, she's nothing but on the inside.
The headpiece, the veil, the rosary, no. All that's changed now. At least it has for me. Now it comes down to two things. This pin of the crucified Christ, which acknowledges my commitment to serve others. And this ring on my left hand, which symbolizes my commitment to serve God. So yes, I am a nun. Yes, I am a recovering alcoholic. And yes, Cody Randall, I can help you.
Kathleen Turner in High. She's a two-time Golden Globe winner, Academy Award and Tony-nominated actress, made her name with films like Romancing the Stone, Prizzi's Honor, War of the Roses, Peggy Sue Got Married, Body Heat, starred on the stage in The Graduate, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, appeared as the fiery body Sue Collini on Showtime's Californication. Yeah. Her new play is High, now a national tour in Boston, then off to Chicago, Washington, San Francisco, more. Kathleen Turner, it is wonderful to have you here. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a nice place to be on a rainy Boston morning.
It's great to have you here in town for a week and then headed on out. Tell us about this character, Sister Jameson. Boy, have you got the voice for her character.
Well, yes. I think Matthew Lombardo, our playwright, I think had me in mind, he said, when he was working on the script. And it's been an extraordinary journey because as much as I have enjoyed and truly, truly loved doing some of the classics, like I think Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf was as good as I ever dreamed it would be. It was so satisfying. Thank you. But it's very exciting to develop new work, to be part of honing and changing and helping a play grow and create a new piece for our library, you know.
You and Matthew Lombardo and the whole cast are a determined set of characters. You got a great reception for this in Hartford when you were beginning to roll it out. Went to Broadway, went to New York.
Went to Cincinnati.
And then Hosanna's there. St. Louis and Hosanna's New York. Boom. 1 week and done. But you wouldn't give it up.
No, I won't. No, I think it's too good. I mean, I really do. What we learned was the audience responses were so extraordinary that even though I think the performances received extremely good reviews.
Yes, indeed.
Question was some of the play itself, and we were convinced due to the audience response that it was truly, truly worth doing. And so we are continuing to do it.
What's more powerful, crack, meth, or God?
Good question. Part of the ongoing, the fascinating conflict in the play is the struggle, the battle within both sides. I think a person with and of faith is in a continual battle to maintain their faith, to keep it solid and strong and supportive. An addict is in a continual battle against whatever he or she is addicted to. So, and the influence of each on the other, this is what it's about. One, can faith be strong enough, or is addiction more powerful? It's a battle without an answer, nor should we provide an answer. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But to illuminate the battle, yes, we should do that.
You are a nun in this play who swears like a sailor. You're tough as nails. You're no mamby-pamby counselor here.
It's such a surprise, isn't it?
Somehow it is not. But throughout that, I mean, the nun herself that you play is a recovering alcoholic, and she's done that in part, and she tries to convey this to this kid who's in so much trouble, that faith has been important to her in achieving that. We know the chemical power of drugs. We've come to know it in our culture and many others.
I'll tell you, the one thing I learned from the tour that we did with this before, you know, through Cincinnati and St. Louis and stuff, we would have these talk backs, you know, probably once every week or two, where the audience could stay and respond to their feelings about the play. Mm-hmm. And what came out of that were these endless, almost, confessions. People who had their children, their partner, their parents, their loved ones were destroyed, their lives, so many lives destroyed by addictions. And I began to think that, my word, you know, I had never understood the extent of this in our country, that it's truly appalling.
And here you were, or are, representing the church or faith in this battle. Now, you're the granddaughter of what missionaries? I think your grandfather, great-grandfather was in China.
Yeah, he was a Methodist missionary to China.
Way back. Yeah. You've had a good chunk of a lifetime to think about it. You've had your own addiction issues to wrestle with.
No, I was fighting one, yeah.
Did you in your own personal circumstances call on faith as a lifeline to help you with addiction? Or was that a factor or not?
Well, I don't know that I want to speak too much about my own personal beliefs. I will say that what I did do is try and learn. When I was, at one point, I was battling with drinking too much alcohol. I was at a point in my life where I had terrible, terrible rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. I have rheumatoid arthritis, but it's much more under control now. Mm-hmm. I mean, before some of these drugs were developed, it was an extraordinarily difficult disease. It is, anyway. And I was consuming too much alcohol. And when I started to really realize that, I went to learn about it. And I went to a center to understand what it was and what it did chemically and mentally. Thankfully, I found, you know, that it was quite possible for me to control it, because I don't like to be out of control. I don't like anything else. I don't think that I want to give up my life to anything, you know, any kind of
higher power or lower chemical.
No, I'm afraid I have to be honest and say that is correct. So I found that a protection as well.
And you made it out of that. Gosh, it's just amazing to be sitting with you here. I'm sure a lot of people listening right now have the same sense from over many years. I mean, just watching you since, it seems like the dawn of time at this point.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, it's 30-some years,
okay,
yes.
It's a lovely chunk. But you've always got this power that you bring to it. And I wonder what you make of it, how you explain it. I'm looking way back here, Vincent Canby describing you. Of course, he's a New York Times theater critic back in the day. An actress of guts and daring, when she opens up and lets fly that sexy near-baritone delivery, she threatens the stability of the entire house like no one since Tallulah Bankhead. I just love that. Threatens the stability of the entire house. What is that generator in you, that engine? What is that?
Oh, good Lord! If you could bottle it, but I think that I've always wanted to be an actress as far back as I can remember.
Your father hated this. This was not
Lord,
in the missionary diplomat line. He would sit outside school theater in London, let your mom go in to watch, and she'd have to report to
him. Yeah, he didn't want to give his approval, you know, by coming in, his tacit approval, by watching me perform, which is a darn shame, because meant he never did, you know, which is such a sad thing. But I just... this is what I've always wanted. This is what I've always seen myself as doing. And perhaps that clarity and that drive comes through.
Did you find the power we all feel when you're doing your thing. Did you find that in the theater, or did you bring it to the theater? Did you already have it as a kid, a girl?
I am told.
Yes, by responsible authorities.
That I was a rather forceful young thing. I think my mother tells a story that I was around 4 years old, and we were back in the States in Missouri. My mother's parents lived for home leave, and it was a Christmas time, and I got up in this department store and commenced singing carols or something, and she sort of had to stop me, and I said, "But everyone likes it."
So come on, Mom. Let's go.
So if that was me as four, yeah, I'm guessing it's been all the way down the line.
Did you have to cool your jets in the early years? I mean, you've become so, I mean, Californication, the Showtime series. I mean, you are so.
Oh, she is awful.
She's brutal.
Oh, she's terrible.
But she swings such a stick. I mean, she just commands the universe there.
She was almost embarrassing to me.
Well,
honestly, I would blush when I was doing her.
Did you improvise there, or was that all scripted for you?
No, that was pretty much scripted because I had no idea what half of that was about. I unlike my so-called image, I have always been a rather, you know, I've been married once for 22 years. I haven't exactly had a raucous lifestyle.
Well, that was about something. Look below the belt, and you know a lot about what that was about. The great Kathleen Turner is with us. She's on national tour right now with her show, Hi. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Kathleen Turner is in the studio with us here. It's just great to have her. Here's another line from the new show, Hi. Recovering drug addict Cody Randall, played here by Evan
Jonikite,
thank you, comes to Kathleen Turner's character, Sister Jameson, for help. She brings a tough, sarcastic approach to counseling.
Why don't we list all the drugs you haven't tried?
Yes, sister, there ain't a drug out there I haven't tried.
Well, good. Good for you. You've done it all. I applaud that.
You really don't seem like a nun.
No, she may not, but that's exactly what she is in High. And here, let's turn the clock back, 1981, the steamy classic now, Body Heat. William Hurt plays Ned Racine, kind of sleazy lawyer who, in the midst of a Florida heat wave, wraps himself in an affair with Kathleen Turner as Maddie Walker, the wife of a businessman. Ooh, smoking. In this scene, acquaintances Ned and Maddie run into one another in a bar.
What's your name, anyway?
Ned Racine.
Maddie Walker.
Wow. You all right?
Yes, I'm fine. My temperature runs a couple of degrees high, around 100. I don't mind. It's the engine or something.
Maybe you need a tune-up.
Don't tell me. You have just the right tool.
I don't talk like that.
Just the right tool. Oh, boy, here we go. Can we talk
My favorite line from that is still, you're not too smart, are you?
Yeah.
I like that in a man.
I like that in a man. Just bring it. Can we talk about the voice for a second? Just listening right there. I don't know. It's kind of an octave higher. What's been the evolution?
It certainly is higher in many ways. And there have been, along the way, choices. Like, for example, in Romancing the Stone, I start Joan, you know, up higher, much around here and everything. And then let her voice deepen as it goes on. And she becomes freer and more, you know, sort of attractive and more
rolling
confident.
With it.
So and sometimes that's choices. But it's also 30 years since Body Heat.
It's just life.
Yeah.
Were you a smoker ever?
Yes. Yes, I was.
Is that part of the sound of your voice over the years or not enough?
I imagine
it
must be. But I don't know. I don't think it's been the most a great factor. But obviously it must have had some impact. I think it's more now life than using the voice so much.
Well, life. Using it also, there's a kind of knowledge in your voice, if I may put it that way. I mean, maybe as an actress you project that, or maybe it's just there now. I mean, you've seen a lot.
Well, I think part of it was growing up, you know, outside of the United States, gave me different reference points in terms of language, and I speak other languages as well.
What do you speak?
I'm pretty much bilingual in Spanish, and then I have some French and Italian, the Romance languages.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try me on German, man. I'm gonna forget
Achtung,
it,
baby.
Not gonna happen. But so I think once someone described my voice, my own speaking voice, which is not a character voice necessarily, right, as having a Spanish inflection pattern, British consonants, and American vowels. And I think that's actually rather close.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, in a way, it takes us back to older American movie stars who had this kind of accent. You weren't sure where it came from.
Sort of international, huh?
Right, sort of mid-Atlantic or even, I'm not sure what. You have little echoes of that. Maybe it's all the locales of your youth at work there.
I think so. I think it's the other languages, the different rhythms, the emphasis that come from other cultures. Yeah, it's all part.
Kathleen Turner is with us. Her new show is Hi, Bud is calling from Nashville, Tennessee.
Hello.
Bud, you're on the air with Kathleen Turner. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I am a grateful recovering addict and alcoholic myself, and so the subject matter in Hi is of great interest to me. And
sure.
My question for you is, are there people in your life that have achieved sobriety through faith? That is truly my experience, and In the discussion, I've heard a lot of words like battle and struggle, and I found in my life that it was really the surrender that got me there.
I
struggled a lot, but ultimately, my surrender to my faith and through higher power is what gave me great relief in my struggles with addiction and alcoholism. And then my second question, I'll be brief, is did you do a lot of your own stunts in things like War, in features like War of Roses and Romancing the Stone? And I'll take my response out there.
Thanks, Bud. Thank you, Bud. Kathleen?
Well, as to your first point, I think when you speak of a surrender, that's a very interesting way to look at it. I think perhaps that you have achieved something more than the characters in this play have accomplished at this point, since I do believe that they're truly still in the midst of the battle here. Hopefully, surrender might come at a later stage with
more
grace.
Though you said personally earlier that surrender wasn't the way for you. You didn't want to surrender anything, be in the thrall of anything.
Well, I didn't feel I needed to either. That hasn't been the path of my life. And I've been wonderfully blessed that I have no one in my family or the dear ones that I love that have had to go through this terrible addiction process. As to your second question, yes, I used to do almost all my stunts until I got rheumatoid arthritis, which was after Serial Mom. When Serial Mom was really one of the... That's when I got really very, very ill after that. But up until then, I absolutely loved doing my own stunts. I mean, they wouldn't let me swing the gorge in Romancing the Stone because of insurance. Yeah. But I got to do the mudslide and jump on the trains and hang off the cliffs.
You were an athlete, a gymnast
as a kid. I was. And that chandelier scene in War of the Roses took about 2 weeks, boy, I'll tell you. And I absolutely loved it.
Oh, we could see that athleticism. I mean, it was just fantastic. It must have been hard to see that slip away. But, boy, it was great when you had it.
Oh, it was wonderful. But I did, yeah, that was then.
Bud, thanks for calling. Diane in Boston, you're on the air with Kathleen Turner.
Hi, Kathleen. It's a real treat to have you on the phone with me. I'm seeing you tomorrow night with my husband.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And I think you're an icon for both men and women. You're sort of the fantasy that every man would like to have, and you're also a fantasy that women would like to be much more like you.
I'll tell you a comment that a dear friend of mine said that I think I actually absolutely love. He said that my epitaph will be more woman than you'll ever get and more man than you'll ever be.
That's classic. That's great, and it suits you. You have a wonderful, wonderful tour with this show.
Thank you. I'm glad you're coming.
Diane, thanks very much for your call. Can we talk about sexiness, sexuality for a minute? You just came on like gangbusters with that embodiment. I mean, I don't know anybody who did not talk about it at the time. It's like, whoa, Kathleen Turner, you got to see this. This is something else.
We were pushing the envelope with Body Heat, you know. I mean, it was
for the
day. Oh, for the day, yeah. From 1981. That was that was pretty out there, you know, stuff. And I think both Bill and Larry Kasdan, you know, our writer-director.
Bill Hurt,
and myself. We all felt that we were being very brave and very, very, and risking, you know, a great deal. But there's been something that has been misquoted slightly for years, which I actually, it was said that what
this
I actually what I actually said, yes, what I actually said was, on a night when I feel really good about myself, if I walk into a room and a man doesn't look at me, then he's probably gay. But they always leave out on a night when I feel really good about myself.
Yes, yeah.
Because to me, that's the whole point. What's sexy is how you feel about yourself, how you enjoy yourself. That's sexy.
Inhabiting that kind of passion for whatever you're bringing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what's sexy.
Did you understand back in the day, you were 24, 25 years old?
25.
Film. Did you understand the sexual power that you were kind of swinging into the media?
Absolutely no way. And absolutely no way. I honestly would have these sort of nightmares that, you know, I would cast a smoldering look at Bill Hurt and the audience would start to giggle.
You know, not a chance.
I mean, Larry and Bill kept telling me, no, don't worry, it's sexy, sexy. I kept saying, are you sure?
Yes, I think they were right.
It just wasn't the way I saw myself. And then, of course, the first time I saw it with an audience, I was like, whoa, okay. Yeah, but it was quite unexpected to me.
You're so smart, and you've got so much life experience. Now, how do you look back on that? I mean, there's always sexuality. When you magnify it through a medium like the big screen, you get this gigantic image, this gigantic head of steam up on that. But then you're living with it as an individual. You're an actress. You're a person who's living with that huge orb around you. Did you come to resent it, enjoy it, play with it? What was your – you must have observed it. How did you think
about it? Yeah, I did. But, you know, I think in a funny kind of way as an actor, as a professional in that sense, you have a sort of a viewpoint toward yourself that's almost like a third eye. It's this sort of recorder that watches what you're doing and the impact on other people and everything. But it's not necessarily judgmental, but it's sort of like a tape that you can play back afterwards and find out what you need to adjust or how you would or should respond in certain circumstances. So it always gives you this sense of detachment in a way, I think, that part of me observes myself as a working performer almost all the time.
And yet the world would come thundering at you based on what it saw on that big screen. It would make presumptions. Oh, there's Kathleen Turner. Whoa.
Yeah, that was pretty silly. There was some times, like in Los Angeles, where people would lie down in front of the car, you know, and men usually, and refused.
Sounds like Serial Mom.
Yes, you know, it was like, oh, come on, get up.
Let's get a call from Vince. Vince, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Kathleen. What an honor. Kathleen, you have been my boyhood dream since I was young. My girlfriend was calling just a few minutes ago, deepening in, and I cannot wait to tell her, I'm sorry, baby, I couldn't get to you. I was on the phone with Kathleen.
Well, you be nice to her now.
Yes, please do, Vince.
If I could change places with anybody at any time, it would have been Michael Douglas when he slid down the bank in...
Well, Manzing.
Two questions. One, would you please just say my name? And number two, I was wondering which movie you enjoyed shooting the most and with which leading man you felt the most chemistry.
Well, first of all, Vincent, I think that I truly enjoy what I do. I mean, I just love acting and stuff. I think some of the most fun I've had was with Michael. But it's always also been Michael and Danny. I mean, it's always been the three of us in the three films we did together. But romancing...
Danny DeVito.
Romancing, you know, I got to go back to South America where I spent 5 years or more growing up. So that was a little bit like going home to me. And I was... That was an added bonus that I truly enjoyed.
Do you remember when Cuba before Fidel?
I remember. I was four in Cuba, and I was in what we call pre-primaria, the pre-kindergarten,
okay,
really.
Yeah, preschool.
But no, I remember that very, very clearly.
In Venezuela, you were older than that or younger?
Oh, yes. I was eight when we went to Venezuela.
Yeah.
So, and then I had 5 years there. But I have some very vivid memories of Cuba, actually, and my poor mother screaming on the phone. Oh, do I have time to tell this story?
Please.
All right. There was, after Castro took over, we were still had relations, you know, with Cuba.
We so, as in the USA. Your dad was a diplomat.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we still had the embassy open. And so when you picked up the phone, while you were waiting for the call to go through, there was a recording, a national record that would go on saying, Castro is our savior, Castro is our thing. Mm-hmm. And I can remember my mother standing in the living room yelling, Castro is a bastard! Castro is... And I'm going, wow!
Okay. Brave mama. Kathleen Turner on Cuba back in the day. Vince, you can take that to the bank. Thanks for calling. Tony in New York City, you're on the air with Kathleen Turner.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Tony. How is it there?
Oh, the Bronx is where it's at.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, unfortunately, Vince took my steam. He took my question, but I'm going to have to give you a new one. Great answer, by the way. Going forward, who would you want to act with in the future? Meaning, going forward, if you had to do another new flick.
Well, man, you know, that's not an easy question to answer because it's so hard to... I always feel have this terrible feeling of leaving someone out. I would love to be on stage with Alan Rickman. I think it would be a gorgeous meld of voices and humor.
What kind of a show? I don't know.
Oh, I think with him, absolutely a comedy. I think we could just bring the walls down, you know.
Alan Rickman, that would be great.
Yeah, he's a British actor, yes, Tony, you know that.
Yeah. Tony, what about Kathleen and Michael Douglas back in the day? Did you like that combo? You there, Tony?
I'm here. I am here.
Ah.
What about Kathleen and Michael Douglas back in the day? What did you think of that one?
Fantastic. That's my number one movie. I loved you in that. And I'm married with my wife 23 years plus. If I had to swing off the chandelier, it would be you, my dear.
Listen, you can get some serious bruises up there.
Yeah, be careful. Be careful up there. You and Michael Douglas in Mexico, I mean, things got hot. You had a thing going on. His, separated wife, I read in your book, came down and sort of pry you two apart.
Well, we were falling in love. At least I think I was. But I was single, and he was separated, so I thought it was probably okay. And then she showed up and made it clear that it wasn't over for her. And that was that, because I'm not one to muck up anybody's, you know, life.
Kathleen Turner is in the house. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Hollywood and Broadway star Kathleen Turner about life, sex, stage, screen, and what she's learned along the way. Here's a little bit from the 1984 hit movie, Romancing the Stone, earned a Golden Globe as the lovely Joan Wilder, New York romance novelist who travels to Colombia, falls in love with a swashbuckling bird exporter, Jack T. Colton, played by Michael Douglas in this scene. Joan delights in their adventure in the South American jungle.
I can't believe I'm doing this.
What?
Digging for treasure with you, Jack.
Yeah.
You're the best time I've ever had.
Never been anybody's best time before.
You're the best time I've ever had, and it was sweet. Everybody loved it. Here, much more recently, from the third season of Showtime's sharp comedy, Californication, Kathleen Turner brings on her sex jive, full steam, as Sue Collini, the foul-mouthed boss of Agent Charlie Runkle, played by Evan Handler. Here she makes yet another pass at Runkle.
Are you trying to tell me something, Runkle? Are you thinking about some role-playing? Because you named the game,
I'll play the part. And I'm good at it. I used to run lines with Margot Kidder. Try me sometime.
Try me sometime, and it's anything goes. By the time you get to Californication, boy, can she bring it on. Scary. Augusta, Georgia, Mary, you're on the air with Kathleen Turner.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello, Mary.
Thank you for having me on. Kathleen, I wanted to tell you that in 1981, I was a sophomore in college, and I had made friends with a guy that I had met on campus, and we were friends, but he finally decided that he was going to ask me out on a date, and I have to tell you that our first date was body heat, and I was sitting in the movie, must have been a little naive to the name of the movie, but as we sat there, I went, oh my God, what has he brought me to see? But we ended up loving the movie. It was awesome. And we have been married for over 20 years now, have two wonderful kids, and we always say that our favorite movie is Body Heat, and we love the music.
Oh, so, that's fantastic. That's a great story. Now, do not go to War of the Roses.
No,
because
no, we've seen that.
Take it all apart.
Body Heat, yeah. So it was a wonderful start to a great romance for us, and a wonderful life together now. So I just wanted to thank you, and thank you for all your work. You're
awesome. Most welcome.
That's pretty great, Mary. A great way to start. Kathleen, talk with us about you move through life. Life throws whatever it throws at you. In your case, it threw arthritis at you in a big way. Rheumatoid arthritis, serious stuff. And, you know, it's hard to get over. We all age. We're not all, you know, 25 in body heat forever. Mm. I mean, very few of us are ever sort of the way you were. How do you, and then as an actress, you're in the public eye all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So we can't be young and beautiful forever. What's the kind of stage steps of working with that?
Well, I'm happy to say that I don't think that my looks were ever the most compelling sense of self that I had. Mm-hmm. You know, I thankfully think my confidence and my sense of self were not based only on my appearance, because I've never considered myself a beautiful woman. I've always thought of myself as a good looking American woman. Mm-hmm. You know, but not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a daughter who I think is beautiful, you know, in a way that I never have been and probably I never will be. But it is a series of acceptance. You must, I mean, Lord knows, in the mail I get every week, there, you know, I'm face to face with myself over the last 30 some years, photographs that people send me, you know, to be autographed and everything. And it's a little tough sometimes to look back and you say, yeah, that looked pretty good, and that's not me anymore. But on the other hand, oh, I still like myself very much. I like who I am. I like the work I do. If that's the trade, I'll take it.
Does theater, you know, in a funny way, make it easier? Because in the end, you're not just putting your face out there. You're putting out so much more for than that. You're exploring so many depths of humanity. Maybe that's a
theater way. Theater is much, much more interesting for women, I think. I always knew
stage
this.
Stage theater.
Stage, yes. Mm-hmm. I always knew that this would be the case. So I never went more than 2 or 2.5 years, I think was the longest, in between, you know, stage productions, because I didn't want to lose my skills or my passion for stage, knowing that as I grew older, the better roles for me would be on stage as opposed to film, all of which has turned out to be quite true. I find the experience of acting on stage is about the most alive I've ever felt being. It's fantastic.
And the night after night of it? Does it rev it up further? Or does it wear you out? Both?
Oh, you get better and better. I mean, it's you every night you discover it can be so as tiny as taking a breath before a word rather than after, or it can be as big as having an insight on a whole scene that you never had before. It's a learning, it's an endlessly challenging process. So every night you're searching and discovering and using what you're learning as you're doing it. That's alive.
Talk to us about Californication. You said you don't even know what's coming at you sometimes, and that you're not even sure you know what's going on. But man, you swing that role, and you know, it is so bawdy, it is so raucous, and you're such a sorry, but kind of ass-kicker in this role.
Oh, she's a terrible woman.
Terrible. But what, but you pull it off with great authority. You said earlier, who was it who said you're the, you'll never be the woman or the man?
Yeah,
and you're
right.
Kind of working with both yin and yang, male and female power all at one time.
Well, you know,
aren't
this
you?
This worked against me a lot when I was younger because, obviously, I have never been one to play an ingenue. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I'll never...
Tougher than
never,
that.
Never going to be Juliet there, you know what I mean? Never was that innocent or seeming or had the voice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not going to happen. And, of course, many times, and I imagine many women experience this, if you have a certain amount of... Oh, what is it? Authority, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Or decisiveness. All those would be called authority and decisiveness in men.
Yes.
In women, they are often called difficult, you know, to be behaving difficultly or being a diva or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, they're the same qualities that would be admired in a man. And you really just have to just... say the hell with that and continue
it.
On your path, yeah.
Do you enjoy exercising that?
Yes, because I'm usually right. There.
we
I've said
that.
It.
We can see that. It's been said. Edgar in Washington, D.C., you're on the air with Kathleen Turner. Thanks for calling, Edgar.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello.
Hi. I'm a huge fan of your body of work. And I gotta say, I enjoy all your performances throughout the years. But one of my favorite movies is one called Undercover Blues.
With Dennis Quaid.
Yeah, Richard Jenkins.
Yeah.
And I can tell you guys were having a lot of fun making a movie. You can tell that there's chemistry between you and Dennis Quaid. Can you make any comments about the your time making the movie?
Well, that was actually really fun. We shot that down in Louisiana, both New Orleans and also down out in the countryside and the salt mines. Whoa, that's an experience. Mm. You try hanging on off underneath an elevator over a 1,500-foot pit. This is something I think everyone should do at least once in their lives.
No,
you know.
Maybe not.
It was. But one of the most fun things about Undercover Blues was the martial arts training. Because I did a lot of work with Aikido masters and some other teachers, so that in fact, in the big fight scene, the Fiona Shaw, who played the villainess, who is a fantastic, wonderful actress, her fight double actually took the bronze in the Olympics in Korea, and that was
serious.
The woman I was fighting. Yes. Oh, boy, was that fun. I had a great time.
Edgar, sounds like you enjoyed it, and I appreciate your call. Let's get one more right here, if I may, from Charlottesville, Virginia. Marissa, you're on with Kathleen Turner.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Kathleen. Thanks
Hello.
For having me. I love your show, Tom. And Kathleen, I had the pleasure of meeting you at the University of Virginia, Virginia Film Festival, a long time ago. And your presence was just incredible. I remember you walked into the room, and it just filled the entire space. And I thought, oh, my God. I want to go into film. I want to be around people like her.
Wow.
And inspired a film career for me. And I soon learned that very, very few, if any other than you, have the presence that you do. So thank
wow, you
so
are very,
much for your work.
Thank you very much for saying such a thing.
Thanks, Marissa. Gretchen's writing in here online saying that she was lucky enough to see you in Virginia Woolf.
Oh, yeah.
Says her... and let's cue up a clip here of that, clip 8 maybe here. Your tightly held power and control and intense frailty in that role of Martha all at the same time. I want to ask you about that, but let's listen to a little bit first. This was 2005,
okay.
Broadway revival, Edward Albee's classic, Who Was Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Critically acclaimed performance as the kind of man-eating Martha driving her husband, Bill Irwin's character George, crazy with her drinking.
Make me another one, lover.
My God, you can swill it down, can't you?
I'm thirsty.
Jesus.
Look, sweetheart, I can drink you under any goddamn table you want. Don't you worry about me.
Oh, I gave you the prize years ago, Martha. There isn't an abomination award going that you have...
I swear, if you existed, I'd divorce you.
If you existed, I'd divorce you.
Hey, pin that one on Albie, man.
Good for him writing it. But there you are. I mean, Jessica Lange, I think, was in the running for that part. Bette Midler, a lot of others. It was all you. Talk about coming into that role. It's such a memorable one.
That role is you know, carries, always has a great deal of weight to me, because I read it first when I was in college, when I was about 20. Mm. And I remember vividly thinking then, okay, when I'm 50, this is my role. So the years go by, of course, and when I turned 49, I thought, okay, I better get going on this. So I got a hold of Edward Albee's producer, a woman named Elizabeth McCann, and asked her if she'd have dinner with me and talk about another production. And she said at the time that Edward wasn't really interested in doing another production, that he, you know, was so wrapped up in his new work and he didn't want to just keep revisiting his old. I said, well, let me talk to him. So she set up a luncheon, and we talked, you know, Edward and I, for some time. And finally he said, so what is it you want? And I said, I want to read it for you. I want a chance to read Martha for you. And he said, all right. So I asked Bill Irwin to join me, and we got a couple of other actors. And at the end of the first act, when we took a short break, Edward came over to me, and he said, I haven't heard anything like that since Uta Hagen. And I said, and you've only heard one act. Because my response is always to be a little flippant. You know, I can't help it. It's just like I can't. You know. Any case, it was thrilling. It was so thrilling. And then at the end of the reading, he said yes.
He said, he told the Times later what you brought to it, a look of voluptuousness, a woman of appetites, yes, but a look of having suffered as well, the sort of fullness that you could bring to it as an actress.
Oh, that poor woman. Honestly, I think Martha is an extraordinarily wonderful character of, you know, a woman of great energy and ambition and intelligence, and thwarted and frustrated in every turn.
Terrific, terrific. Kathleen Turner role, one of many. Now you're in High. Are you still working toward a Molly Ivins?
I start that
show
next week, actually.
Next week, is that
well,
right?
Well, yes. I developed
Red Hot Patriot.
Red Hot Patriot. Now, next week I'm heading out to L.A. to take that to the Geffen Theater.
Uh-huh.
And I'll do that all of January and February. Then I'll come back to High in March, April, May, and then we'll be traveling to the Kennedy Center and San Francisco and Chicago and all of those places. And then, I didn't, you know, Molly Ivins is, in this upcoming, you know, the fall of 2012 would be a real nice slot for her, you know?
Yes, it would.
And she had plenty to say, that
this
lady.
Of course, the you know, very famous Texas reporter, commentator,
political
brassy,
humorist.
Political humorist.
She was, but so politically brilliant. There's one of my favorite lines, if you don't mind, from the play.
Yes, please, do it.
Is she's talking about this Texas senator, you know, and she wrote in the newspaper, she wrote, well, if his IQ sinks any lower, we'll have to water him twice a day. And there was this huge uproar. You know, Molly Ivins can't say that.
And yet she did. Talk about tailor-made for you. I mean, that just seems absolutely
ideal.
Well,
I had the chance to meet her several times because I am on the board of People for the American Way for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And Molly came to several of our events and helped us, you know, with our programs. And I just thought she was wonderful.
Did I also see your chairperson of Planned Parenthood?
I'm chairman of the Board of Advocates for Planned Parenthood, yes.
What do you think of the sort of campaign that they're under right now? People really been going after that 6 weeks
to
Sunday.
Absolutely. It makes me sick. It just makes me both heart sick and sick to my stomach, as it does so many people. Because this whole fight about family plan, defunding Title IX, you know, family planning, is really essentially a destruction of women's health care. And I really do think that this is something that is not simply a matter of religious, for it is truly anti-women.
Why?
This is a very good question. I think historically, of course, and this is true in most of our major religions also, controlling a woman's reproductive ability is controlling her life. And this is very threatening, perhaps, or uncomfortable for many of the patriarchal figures in our society.
Are we not past that?
One would think we would be, and we should be. Certainly, you cannot in any way doubt the extraordinary contributions that women are making and have made to the betterment of the world. So trying to take away our ability to control our bodies is a stunning and rather disgusting, to my mind, attack.
Kathleen Turner, chairperson of the, give it to us again.
Board of Advocates for Planned Parenthood of Federation of America.
And much, much more. Just launching national tour after a short time in Broadway, but now back on the road with High. Look for Red Hot Patriot, her one-woman show, Molly Ivins, she'll bring to the stage coming up very soon, and you may hear more about that in the year 2012. Kathleen Turner, it's an absolute pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you so much.
Wow, this went fast.
Yes, it always does. Great to have you. Please come back sometime, and very good luck to you.
I will.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at On Point Radio. And thanks for joining us today. Kathleen Turner, wonderful to have you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.